Every year, at the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month, we stop to commemorate the armistice of the Great War.
The forces of Germany have surrendered to the United Nations. The flags of freedom fly all over Europe.
We pause to reflect and remember the sacrifices of Australian troops in all wars and those currently on active service around the globe.
They shall not grow old as we that are left grow old. Age shall not weary them, nor the years condemn. At the going down of the sun and in the morning, we will remember them.
On this Remembrance Day, Mick Molloy and Jane Kennedy sit down with some returned servicemen and women, as well as their families, to share their experiences and to talk about the good work that the organisation Soldier On are doing to help them adjust back into society. This includes fundraising for a new facility as part of the Concord Hospital in Sydney. This is the Kennedy Molloy Remembrance Day special for Soldier On. Here are Mick and Jane with their first guest.
One of the most extraordinary fellows I think I've ever met in my life.
Agreed.
This is Damien Tomlinson, and he's been inspired by the history of his own grandfather.
Yep.
Damien joined the Australian Defence Force, I think he was only about 24, as a commando.
Yep.
Yeah, pretty high stakes that he was involved in.
They go all right, those commandos.
Damien got horrendous injuries through an improvised Taliban bomb.
Yep.
Resulted in both of his legs being amputated.
Yep.
I think one of the most moving things that Damien has said is that if it wasn't for his mates,
yes,
he wouldn't be here today.
He maintains that.
It hasn't stopped him getting on with life, but he points out the difficulties that he and his mates have along the way.
Sure.
Now, you might recognise recently Damien from Australian Survivor.
That's right.
Yeah, he's also a bit of a movie star. He's done the Kogoda track. He's unstoppable.
He needs to calm down. He's making us all look bad. Take a chill pill, dude.
So backstage at the Soldier On fundraiser early this year, we sat down with Damien and Mick talked about the first time they met.
It was a 2nd Commando Regiment dinner.
Commando Welfare Trust dinner, yeah.
And I remember we were doing a standing ovation and I got sick of it. And I'm going, this is getting terrible. And then Pete Harvey goes to me, see that guy on your left?
Yeah.
He's standing. He has no legs.
Oh, right.
He is not complaining.
So harden up, sunshine.
He was talking.
Can you believe this guy?
He was talking about you and I went, oh, yeah, good point. How are you, mate?
I'm fantastic, mate. How are you?
And as always, you seem in pretty good spirits. You always seem to be a pretty happy camper to me. Fair call?
100% fair call.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm probably one of the most fortunate people that's still alive.
That's an incredible thing to say.
Yeah, well, I had 12 people give their mental health, their lives and everything they do and everything involved in it to make sure that I could live. So my life now, I have to kind of pinch myself every time I wake up just over the fact that I've lost something but I've gained so much more.
It's an incredible attitude and not a surprising one. A lot of the guys I ask and you say, if you say, why do you do it for your country? Do you do it for politics? Do you for anything? They say they do it for their mates and their friends who they're going over the trenches with, basically, which is always the thing that comes back. To me, is the most important thing.
100%. You do it for the guy beside you. You know what I mean? I don't think at the rank level that I was at, you can't make political decisions. You can't think about political decisions. Elsewise, the guy next to you might cop a round between the eyes.
Yep.
Even worse, the guy next to him, you know what I mean? You're responsible for everyone who is around you, and it's one of those type processes that, you know, you've got to believe in the guy's ability, which is why, I mean, even at the moment, the guys who I was fortunate enough to serve near they blow my mind still.
Yeah, and me too. I mean, I'm in awe.
And you blow our mind. Sorry, I'm just sort of looking at you. First of all, movie star looks, have
Here
to say.
We go.
It was Hacksaw Ridge. Only two Oscars.
So you were in Hacksaw Ridge.
Yep.
I was really lucky with that. I went to this, surprisingly enough, I didn't really know whether I was in touch with my emotions because I'd done enough to desensitize myself before we did the biggest deployment of our lives. When I came back, I obviously came back in pieces and had to try and rebuild who I was. In my mind, I was still me.
Mm.
But then you're still you that can't work out twice a day and run. So my dad loves it too. He's like, finally. Finally, you're in this spot where you can actually think. You have a brain, so use it.
I want to interview your dad. He sounds like a right.
And it sounds like you do have a brain, very much so. Your rehabilitation program ongoing, I can imagine. How important is Soldier On to you and the understanding of how it can be and affect so many other people?
I mean, Soldier On facilitate a bunch of different events. They do a great job when it comes to the facilitation of events, and the one that's had the greatest impact on me has been the Soldier On ISP Honda combination when it comes to the golf tour. Yep. You know, I mean, I like golf just based on the fact that my physical...
Yes.
Physical capabilities don't change too much on a golf course. Mind you, my handicap's 20, so we're working on bringing that back.
Not too bad.
We've got a game going here. We're going to have to go. We're going to have to play some skins because I'm off 22. This will be...
Sweet. Well, that's money. It's one of those things. I think the biggest thing is, you know, my dad said the biggest challenge you're ever going to have is yourself.
Mm.
You know, and then when you walk out onto a golf course, that's the person who you're playing. You're playing yourself to things, to do all that. You learn a lot of lessons out on the golf course that I really wish that the 21-year-old me would listen to. But if I had to go back and speak to him, he'd ignore me until I slapped him. So
what I'm going to do is tell everyone when I'm not turning up for work, so I'm on the golf course, I'll say, I'm bettering myself. I'm getting a better understanding of who I am. I'll be back when I've had an epiphany.
It is a mental help. It's doing its thing. It's all right. It's good. I'm growing.
Do you still catch up with a few of the boys? Are you in contact with the lads?
Yeah, I do. I definitely do. I mean, I made a conscious decision when I left the Defence Force to leave it in their hands when they contact me.
Yep.
Because I mean, I'm responsible for the worst night in a lot of people's lives and solely responsible just based on what happened. Yes, it's chance, but still. And we've had two casualties and two suicides that were close to what happened to me. And I mean, from there, it really reinvigorates what you think you should do with your life. All of a sudden, you know, and I've still got my friend Ian Turner, his message is saying, well, I was actually in a dark space at that time. I was in a really dark space, and I tried to ring him, and he said he was going to call me back because he was down in a loud pub. Walked out by that stage, I'd gone to sleep. You know, it took him maybe 5 minutes to get out there, and I woke up to three messages that will never leave me. And I was saying, we didn't spend 56 minutes on the ground to keep you alive for you to give up. Don't ever do it. You know, and then, losing him was, I think, one of the hardest things that's ever happened. You know, to me, that sacrifices in their soldiers' sort of burden, a sacrifice is their family's burden.
Yep.
They're the people who carry you through. They're the people who help you along the way. And I'm just gifted in the fact that I have such a great family and good people around me to the point where I can push forward and hopefully live out the dreams that the guys would have wanted me to.
Thank you for talking to us, and thank you for sharing your story with our audience. These are the stories people need to hear, so we really appreciate Damien coming along.
Thanks very much, Mick. I think the stories that everyone really needs to hear are the guys who no one knows exist.
Yep.
That's true.
You know, I mean, I'm alive because of the eight that are left of that crew of people. So, I mean, just to everyone listening, if you can have that small moment on Anzac Day or Remembrance Day, either of the two, walk up, maybe nod, say thank you, or at least shake their hand, because you could mean the difference between someone getting buried and someone staying alive.
Good on you, mate.
So, beautifully said.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Kennedy Malloy's Remembrance Day special for Soldier On.
David Savage's story is a little different. He was not, in fact, a member of the Defence Force, but a civilian. He's been a peacekeeper, UN human rights and war crimes investigator, and former police officer. He has served in numerous war zones, including Sri Lanka, Mozambique, and East Timor, and in 2012 was working in Afghanistan as a representative of the Australian government.
My role was, I was a civilian, what they call a stabilisation advisor.
Which is a big job in this part of the world.
Yes, and perhaps not so successful if you look what's happening now.
not at all. You gave some of the most interesting observations I heard over there were from you about how to unpick or deal with the local community and their problems there.
Yeah. I was working within the what they call the provincial reconstruction team. So that was the majority were military from Australia and the US, and some advisors such as myself to work basically as a conduit between the military and the yep. Afghan people and the Afghan government.
It was in Afghanistan that David was injured in a suicide bomb attack just one day after meeting Mick Molloy.
So we were in a helicopter together and yep. I went home that day, and then tell us what happened to you, because this is a very interesting story and not typical of the injuries that occur over there, but it's everyone needs to hear this.
So the morning after, you came to do a show at Mirrorwise for the Australians and the Americans that were
yep.
based at the forward operating base. We had a high level meeting was planned the following day, so I had to go to the district governor's office because the narrowness of the roads there, it's too difficult to take the armoured
yep.
vehicles because they get trapped within the compounds. So we would usually walk, or what they call dismounted patrol. So I had 16 US soldiers as my what they call the security yes. detachment. So they
I met some of these guys.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah.
Were you nervous as you were walking along? I mean, it sounds like a lot of people to have around you, but it sounds like a pretty nerve-wracking time anyway for you.
Look, there's a term that they call stepping outside the wire, mm. and which means going outside the base, and all of the bases have a wire perimeter outside the sort of hardened walls. And even though within the bases you are vulnerable for what they call indirect fire, mortars or rockets and things, once you stepped outside the wire, you were incredibly vulnerable because you didn't know, you know, who the enemy was. And one minute you could be talking to somebody who is a farmer or, you know, and he's asking for assistance with putting a well in or a school in or something, and the next minute they've picked up their AK-47 and they're part of the Taliban. So, you know, no one's uniformed, and as we know, nothing is sacrosanct, so children and things are used by them to...
Now, this was specific to your case, isn't it? Can you talk us through briefly, if you don't mind, if it's not too personal for you, for our listeners, what happened in your instance?
So after we had the meeting with the district governor, we were returning to the forward operating base, and it's about a 700-metre walk. And unfortunately, it's... you're walking through a bit of a canyon because of walls of these
yep.
compounds, so you're sort of trapped and funneled through. And when vehicles or motorbikes come towards the patrol has to stop so that they can search them. And unfortunately, on this occasion, a vehicle came to the front of the patrol. And the patrol had to stop while they searched the motorbike and its riders, but that was a ploy to stop the patrol. Whilst that happened, behind me, a child who had been the insurgents or the Taliban had strapped a suicide vest onto a 12-year-old boy.
Yep.
He'd been dressed all in white. He walked down, came out from behind a what they call a koala, which is a housing compound, and walked downhill through the houses towards the road where I was stationary. And unfortunately, in the week or two beforehand, because we'd been reasonably successful in getting the community on side, we'd started receiving threats, what they call night letters, from the insurgents threatening the community that they would be attacked if they continued to interact with me.
Yeah.
And also in these night letters were threats against me for doing that.
Yes.
So the child walked through the patrol and got onto the road, and then just as he was about 15 metres from me, he ran straight towards my back, and they estimate about 2 or 3 metres from my left backside, he or others detonated the suicide vest that he was wearing.
It's an incredible story, and I want to say this, because I think you've touched on it here, but as well as a military conflict, it's a battle for the hearts and minds of the local community. And why this is so insidious, apart from obviously using a 12-year-old boy to deploy a bomb, is because you are making genuine headway and that community trusted you, and you're at the forefront of building a better community. And the work you were doing was so incredible and recognised by these people who acted. So I learned more from you, I think, in that 24 hours than I did about the situation on the ground over there. And I was very proud to have met you and to still know you.
Thanks very much.
A very sobering story. And thus began David's journey to recovery and rehabilitation. It has left a great impact on his family, particularly his incredibly strong wife, Sandra.
No one else is going to do this but me, and all of a sudden I'm responsible for someone else's medical decisions and...
Wowie.
Yeah.
We'll hear more from Sandra about David's recovery and the great work of Soldier On next.
This is the Kennedy Malloy Remembrance Day special for Soldier On.
David Savage was the first Australian civilian critically injured in Afghanistan. The patrol he was travelling with was attacked by a 12-year-old boy wearing a suicide vest bomb. His wife Sandra recalls the night she received the phone call no military family wants.
I had gone to bed and was asleep, and I received a phone call at 11 o'clock at night by the then acting head of AusAid to tell me that David had been critically injured in a suicide bomb blast.
Possible nightmare.
It was, and I kept expecting his next words to be, and he's dead, because I really couldn't imagine anybody surviving such a thing. He said that he had lived and that he was being transferred to a hospital in Kandahar. It actually had been 6 hours after the incident before they contacted me. So I obviously contacted our children, and within 36 hours I was flown to Germany with the children to be with David. And I didn't know what he was going to look like. Nobody briefed me.
He's a pretty good-looking rooster, so I just want to know.
He scrubbed up all right.
My message back home was, he's still pretty.
I can't imagine what a terrible time that is for you. And you said, so the information you have is that he's critically injured but he's going to survive?
I didn't find out that he was no longer life-threatening until about an hour or two before I left for the airport, and I'd spoken to a doctor directly in Afghanistan who said he's now no longer life-threatening.
Yep.
And we're transferring him to Germany while they continue with his treatment. And so we went there, and once initially sort of seeing him, I sort of, had to go and take a bit of time by myself for, a cup of coffee or whatever, and then I thought, okay, I have to... No one else is going to do this but me, and all of a sudden I'm responsible for someone else's medical decisions. And
wowie.
Yeah.
And this is, and as we say,
this is as real as it gets.
As real as it gets. And this is the type of thing this organisation is designed for, isn't it?
Yes.
It's more than just David and David's injuries. Yeah. It's how to cope with everything around that. How are you going, and how can you tell us how the journey has been? Okay.
I'm tired.
You're tired. I don't need to tell. That's a life-changing event. But how's it going?
It's slow. It's slow, and I think that's one of the things that people don't realise, is that the recovery and rehabilitation from such injuries. David's right arm was the only part of his body that wasn't hit by shrapnel. So it's been a very slow process for David. He was walking. He's now in a wheelchair. I didn't return to work from the night I got the phone call, and it's been just over 6 years now, and I'm now David's full-time carer.
Besides the obvious physical therapy, what has been helpful to you in your mental rehabilitation?
One of the problems of, if you want to call it a problem, of being a civilian is that public servants and departments don't actually get what's involved in injuries. And I think it was before I'd actually even left hospital that a department that I'd worked for said to Sandra, "Oh, look, you know, how much longer do you think it is? We're surprised it's taken so long for him to be better." But the blast threw me in the air 10 metres, and I landed on my back, and I was paralysed from the neck down from what they call spinal shock and things, which luckily went. But the shock wave that goes through you has such a effect on you, on your brain and things, that I didn't even know what my date of birth was. So I couldn't write my name. I couldn't use the right side of my body. So literally there was, two legs in plaster and things, my right arm in plaster up to my shoulder. I had wounds all through my body. But my right arm, which was uninjured, I couldn't use because of the damage to the nerves in my brain. So so literally I was relying on Sandra and our kids and things for absolutely everything. There was nothing that I could do for myself. I couldn't even clean my teeth or do anything.
Yep.
Part of the new facility sold you on a fundraising for at Concord Hospital, his accommodation, so that family members, a vital part of the recovery process, can stay where they are needed most, that's with their loved ones.
When David was initially in hospital in Darlinghurst, I had to, at midnight, because I was at the hospital anywhere up to 18 hours a day, and walking up the streets of Darlinghurst back to the hotel, past building sites, pubs, I was actually really frightened.
Of course.
And there was another time when David was in hospital for 3 weeks, and I have to pay for myself to stay here and be with him. And I was obviously trying to get budget accommodation, and I was doing mystery deal after mystery deal on one of the accommodation of websites.
Yeah.
And moving hotel room to hotel room and washing, our clothing out of the sink. So this
new facility in Concord is just going to be life-changing for so many people in Australia.
It would have been invaluable. Right. It really would have.
So if you want to donate to this fundraising effort or to learn more about the great work Soldier On do, head to soldieron.org.au.
And coming up, we hear from John Bale, the co-founder of Soldier On, about the origins of this great organisation.
This is Kennedy Malloy's Remembrance Day special for Soldier On.
John Bale is Chief Executive Officer and co-founder of Soldier On. He served in the Army for 12 years. John and his co-founders established Soldier On following the death of John's close friend, Lieutenant Michael Fussell, in 2008 from an IED blast in Afghanistan. We talked to John about his good mate, Michael.
We joined the Army together coming out of Armidale, New South Wales. We were going to see the world and decided that the Defence Force is the way that we were going to do that. We'd both been mates for a while, come, I guess, from small country town, but also small little agricultural areas. And we decided that this was an opportunity. Unfortunately, in 2008, after we'd done our initial training, Michael was overseas and I'd just come back from Afghanistan myself and found out that he'd been killed by an improvised explosive device.
On that day, where were you and how did, that must have been devastating, John, seriously.
Yeah, so I was here in Sydney, actually. I was posted to Sydney. I'd just come back. I was going into a shopping centre, which is, pretty mundane, I guess, but having just come back, it's a big experience to see so many people, so many lights and so many things. Yes. So it was a phone call that you just got out of the blue and did not expect. I went home and, to be honest, just cried. I'd never been that shell-shocked in my life. It's the first officer that we'd lost since Vietnam. Yep. You just don't expect it. You especially don't expect it to be someone you know, let alone someone you joined the army with. But what came out of that is his family just got incredible support from the Armidale community, from the army community, and from the community in general.
Indeed.
What was missing, though, is that those were not the only people impacted by that incident. Others were wounded physically and psychologically. Yes. And we as a community didn't even know about them, let alone have the ability to support them.
How long before you actually developed this idea that more was required and that you could do something about it?
Look, a couple of years, because in that period of time, what we saw overseas was models that were working really well. During that period of time as well, my fiance at the time turned into my wife, who was a psychologist, and obviously she, being at that time a veteran spouse, spoke to a lot of other spouses yep. who were struggling with a lot of things and recognised that there was a real issue here. So we had a very long drive up to Noosa on going on holidays and decided in that 14-hour drive that we were going to set this up together. We were
it
going
sounds
to do
so
something.
Organic how it starts, yeah. you know, how it's evolved, which is wonderful, which it does take time, I guess, to get something like this up and running.
Well, it was all about destigmatising this to start with, making sure that you could actually put your hand up and say, yes, I've been impacted by what I've seen overseas. Yes, it's okay to actually go and seek the services that we need to seek. What we found during that period, though, there was a lot of services that the community could offer to really complement what was being provided by the Defence Force and by the Department of Veterans Affairs. So we've turned it from, an awareness organisation into actually a service delivery organisation, employment education services, mental health through our clinical psychologists, and a range of activities that we run across the country to really help build that connection between those who have served so that they don't get out and don't have any mates again, because that can actually happen.
Someone who's immensely proud of John Bale's commitment to creating this amazing organisation is Madeleine Fussell, the mother of Lieutenant Michael Fussell, John's best mate, who died in Afghanistan. We talked to Madeleine about these two boys from Armidale who ended up in the army together.
Mike went to the Armidale School, which John also attended, and they were in cadets for a while together. John stayed in cadets. Mike went into surf lifesaving. Mm-hmm. But then they both enlisted on the same day for the army and went through ADFA together.
Was there a military background in your family, Madeleine?
Both the grandfathers had been involved and saw action in World War II, mm-hmm. But they weren't career army people. They just joined up because at that time it was needed.
As a mum, when your son says, "I'm joining the army," how did you feel?
He got a fair bit of negativity from me. And I remember saying to him, "Darling, it's not that I don't want you to be in the army, I just don't want you to come home in a box." And I remember him saying, "Oh, Mum, don't be so silly, you know, those days are over. It's a very different job role these days and it's much more diverse than that and it's the sort of job I want, and please stop being negative about it because this is something I really want to do." And once I realised that, yes, and then I was supportive of him. I just thought at the time it was some sort of teenage, you know, phase, and the yeah. sooner we got through that one, the better. But it wasn't, and he went on to actually ace his interviews and get a scholarship to go through.
We bang on a lot in this country about mateship, and sometimes it gets a little jingoistic, but these boys were thick as thieves, weren't they? And I can't think of this John Bale, who must have felt and regarded Michael so highly, given that's been the driving force of the second part of his life, is to basically honour his friend.
I just think it's a testament to John's character generally. They were very good mates. When Mike died, John was privy to his injuries very early on, and Mike would have been a triple amputee. And he couldn't help but wonder what would have been there for Mike if he had survived. And it was amazing. And he realised that, you know, it was needed not just for the Mikes but many of the others with PTSD as well.
Currently, Soldier On are raising funds for their own centre at Concord Hospital in Sydney to be named in honour of Madeleine's son, Michael. Here's John Bale again talking about why these funds are so badly needed.
At this point in time, the New South Wales State Government has funded a part of this hospital.
It's a lot of money too. Is it? How much money have they tipped in?
$350 million, wasn't
it? Yeah, so $341 million. And that's going to redevelop the entire, well, actually not all of Concord, but a lot of it. A lot of Concord is actually falling down. It's World War II era and it's not providing enough of a service to that area. So all credit to the government here in New South Wales are going to fix a lot of that. Part of that's going to be a clinical centre for those who have served, providing them with mental health support, with physical rehabilitation, etc. What isn't funded is our part, which is an accommodation facility so that those that have served and especially their families can stay here, just like you do with Ronald McDonald House.
Sure.
You can stay with those that you care about. And we need to also build our little bit of the facility, which is where we'll provide employment, education support, some follow-up services.
That's brilliant.
and a few other elements as well.
All of those services provided by Soldier On have become so vital for returned soldiers, something Madeleine Russell knows all too well. Having not only lost her son on the battlefield, Madeleine has felt the ramifications of war right throughout her life.
Ken and I just have such a vested interest in this because Ken's father came back from World War II with PTSD and so did mine. And Ken's father was actually treated at Concord Hospital and repeatedly discharged because there was nothing physical.
Right.
The understanding wasn't there and the trauma, the understanding of the mental trauma and this is what, you know, it's one of the focuses as well. And that isn't it terrific to hear young people like John as well talking about comfortably taking away the stigma about mental health issue as well.
And to have our family, to have Mike's name associated with that catalyst for change. Can you imagine how
Absolutely.
Special that is?
Oh, I can't. I can't. It's so emotional.
Very, should be very proud.
It's just amazing. Well, we feel privileged that, I mean, I feel with my husband, I feel so sad for him. I feel like his whole life has been dictated by war. His father dying when he was only 10 as a result of it, growing up, you know, with a mother trying to cope with six children, and then we come sort of full circle and his own son is killed at war. And you sort of feel like this tonight's bringing something good out of something
really
bad.
I'm so happy then. I'm so happy for you too then.
I think really we just want people to realise tonight that it's real. We're not just talking about something that hasn't happened to us that... And there hasn't been enough change over the last 60 years.
It's been a great pleasure to meet you and to feel, not like that I know your story, but through John and through my involvement with this organisation, getting a sense of the great sacrifice so many of you have made for us over the years. We can't thank you enough.
Thank you so much, both of you.
To learn more about the Michael Fussell Centre of Excellence at Concord Hospital or to donate to the cause, head to soldieron.org.au.
This is Kennedy Malloy's Remembrance Day special for Soldier On.
Peter Lay is the former Chief of the Army and current Chairman of the Board of Soldier On, and he reminds us on this Remembrance Day about all of the Defence Force personnel still on active service across the globe.
We've still got them in Afghanistan.
Yep.
We've still got them in Iraq. They're in Africa, in Sudan and places like that. There's United Nations deployments all over the place. We're doing some work now in the Philippines.
Mm-hmm.
We're not hearing much about that, but the Philippines is where many of the terrorists and the leftovers from ISIS are coming back to.
Okay.
So the ADF is looking at what they can do to support that. We shouldn't forget that there are many members of the Navy, but also some of the Coast Watch and the Customs and Border Protection people who are working to the northwest, looking after our borders. Mm. So they're all over the country. I'm sure tonight.
They're doing such a great job. As I said, I've had a rare glimpse into it, being privileged to go overseas and see them in action, and it's amazing to see how well respected our servicemen and women are in these theatres of war and how well respected.
As far as career choices too for young people, how is that going with people joining up?
Are we going? It's really not much of a problem. They get plenty coming in.
Yep.
It's a big defence force, Army, Navy and Air Force, adding up to over 50,000. So about 10% leave each year, so 5,200. They're the ones that we've got to focus on. Not all of them are damaged. Many of them are great finds for employers, and that's one of the things we want to talk about tonight.
I would have thought so too. If I was employing, I haven't
seen
some.
Well, you know that you work at McDonald's, that's a big tick. There's got to be one for being in the Defence Force.
Well, how about in the Defence Force where you really know about being part of a team, where you know about learning your skills, where you know about protecting and working with each other? Some people imagine, well, you know, they're just been in the army, the disciplinarians or hierarchical. No.
Not true.
These people who can solve problems, people have proven that they can get up early. And it's strange, you know, if you're working, you got to get up, go to work. And when you get there, you got to work.
Yeah. And maybe. Big surprise.
Yeah, but well.
What a great resource we have at our disposal. Yeah. Returned servicemen and women.
The 25th Prime Minister of Australia, John Howard, was one of the first ambassadors for Soldier On back in 2012. He remains an influential figure in the organisation, especially in terms of helping fundraising and awareness.
I was responsible for sending a lot of Australian defence people into the field, risking their lives. Sadly, a number of them lost their lives, and that always weighs on me. And I think one of the small ways as a private citizen, if I can put it that way, I suppose you can... Be described as a private citizen when you're no longer in the job,
sure.
Yes.
Is to help a charity like Soldier On, and it's very practical.
Yeah.
Some people adjust, some people don't.
Yes.
And the value of Soldier On is to help those who do find that adjustment process hard, and to help their families, and to do it in practical ways of getting them together with their mates, to get the families together, and most of all, to throw an arm around people and say you're not forgotten, you're still appreciated.
Absolutely.
It disrupted your life a lot, and we're here to help.
Yes.
And what a great project for Soldier On to work on, this Concord Hospital as a fundraiser. I just can't think of the added on value and the benefit to families.
Well, it's an extraordinary place, Concord Hospital, because it was a repatriation hospital exclusively for many years. Now it's a general in repatriation hospital. And in fact, I was there only a couple of weeks ago visiting a friend of mine who subsequently died. He was a very old gentleman who'd served in World War II and been a prisoner of war. And it's a marvellous facility, but it needs some money. It needs some government help, and we're working on that.
You've got some friends?
I've been trying to twist a few. I don't have the pen and the checkbook anymore.
You've got a couple of numbers.
They took it away from me 10 years ago. But all I can do is shout from the sidelines. But there's some very generous philanthropy being made available, and it is a great project.
I just have to ask you quickly, my father was in the Air Force for 35 years. I believe ASIO have a file on me. That never came across your desk at any stage.
Well, you know, I never talk about security matters. You know, with a golden rule in the interests of the national defence, I don't talk about security matters.
We'll keep it under wraps with that, and we should end on that note. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Cheerio. See you.
This is Kennedy Malloy's Remembrance Day special for Soldier On.
Today we pause to remember those that have sacrificed so much for our freedom and those that have returned forever changed by their experience. John Bale.
Well, Remembrance Day this year is very special because it's literally 100 years since Armistice. It's the war that should have ended all wars. It didn't, obviously. And on that day, I remember, you know, my mate who passed away, but also all of those who are still living that we can make sure get the support they deserve. And so when you're taking a minute silence for those who have fallen, let's also take a minute silence for those who are still with us. And in that minute silence, work out what we can do to help them.
For Madeline Fussell, Remembrance Day is very personal.
Remembrance Day is a particularly sad one for us because I always associate it with a gorgeous man who died in Afghanistan, and his funeral was held on Remembrance Day, and he was one of our sons who's also in the army. He's very good friends. So Remembrance Day suddenly seems to go from that wider context that he always had for me down to this much smaller context of remembering Bryce. Okay. It was just one of those horrific things, you know, to be killed by the people that you're over there to protect. And none of us could really get our heads around it. And I think of people like Bryce and their innocence.
Yeah. Okay.
And his family.
Damien Tomlinson wants you to help our soldiers today.
Just to everyone listening, if you can have that small moment, walk up, maybe nod, say thank you, or at least shake their hand, because you could mean the difference between someone getting buried and someone staying alive.
After a 37-year career in the Defence Force, Peter Lay reflects on Remembrance Day.
Thinking about those soldiers, sailors and airmen over so many years, and one of the trips I did was to South Africa for the Boer War, and that's where we started at war for this nation. And I've done many tours and looked at many places, and I think of those individual soldiers, sailors, airmen, and think, thank you. We do remember them. But this year in particular, I think it's important we remember that this is the commemoration of the end of the First World War. And to me, maybe we could have done more to look after them.
Yes.
We threw too many of them out on the soldier settlement farms. We didn't understand PTSD. We didn't understand some of the physical injuries that we had. And I think as I remember those days, I think there's more we can do to support our soldiers, sailors and airmen today.
And that's what Soldier On is all about.
Can you tell John Bale to pull his finger out? I just worry he hasn't achieved enough or is doing enough for
this
cause.
He's a magnificent young man, isn't he?
He really is incredible.
What he's done. He's making us all look bad, I think, at the moment.
If you'd like like to contribute or just learn more about the vital work John Bale and Soldier On are doing, head to soldieron.org.au.
Thanks to everyone who shared their stories with us today. Through conversation and awareness, as well as fundraising and action, we can help look after those who have given so much for our country. We send thanks and best wishes to those on active service around the globe. We also pledge to help those that have returned and need assistance, and we honour those that made the ultimate sacrifice in service of our nation, lest we forget.